We're still in that Sermon on the Mount that we started several weeks ago, anticipating being here now for some time. Just remember, the Sermon on the Mount started out with those Beatitudes: blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven, and all the other ones. The encouragement of Christ to be both salt and light as we live here in this world. He's also began to open the eyes of his audience, just remembering they were legalists for the most part who came there that day, that believed that the way that you make yourself right with God is that you do it on your own, that you keep his law and abide by his rules and regulations. And Jesus has already begun to chip away at that foundation. And one of the things that he's done is he's shown them how much deeper the law of God is than they think it is. There's a lot more to the Ten Commandments that they convinced themselves. The commandment that has to do with not committing murder is way deeper than that, because he says that if you've been angry with another one, then you have broken that commandment, and you've broken it sufficiently enough to be thrown into hellfire. So we know that even though some people there in the beginning who were very comfortable and cozy in their sense of innocence now begin to realize that when it comes to God and his things, there are no innocent people. That we have all sinned and fallen short of God's glory. One of the funny things about all of this is you have these guys coming and they're telling Jesus what the law means. And Jesus is actually not only the best interpreter of the law, he's also the source of the law. That they're basically coming to him and telling him what his law means. Now, how ridiculous is that? But we know that people tend to be that way. Very often we are very ridiculous. Okay, so we're going to be looking at verses 33 through 37. Again, you have heard that the ancients were told, "You shall not make false vows, but shall fulfill your vows to the Lord. But I say to you, make no oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is the footstool of his feet, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you make an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your statement be yes, yes, and no, no, and anything beyond this is evil." I want you to understand something here. Jesus is not telling us that we should never make oaths and vows. Really, the emphasis here is this, is that you need to be serious about it when you do. In other words, don't make oaths and vows that you are not determined to keep. You find examples in Scripture in a number of different places that encourage people to make vows, but at the same time, in every one of those places, you're going to find there's a great stress upon the seriousness of making oaths and vows, because basically you're given a promise. One of the ones that always stands out for me is if you look in the book of Judges, there's one of the judges by the name of Jephthah. And there's a story about him, and the idea was this, that they came to him and they begged him to become judge of Israel because Israel was being oppressed by foreign invaders. And this is what Jephthah says. He accepts it, but then he says this to God. He says, "If you will indeed give the sons of Ammon into my hand, then it shall be that whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return to in peace for the sons of Ammon, it shall be the Lord's, and I will offer it up as a burnt offering." Well, if you know the story, what happens is this, is when he returns home, his daughter comes out, the first one to come out the door to greet her father home. And he shares with her this oath that he had made to the Lord, and she asks one thing of her father. She says, basically, "Do to me what you said to God that you would do. Just give me a little time first. I want to go up into the mountains with some of my friends and hang around for a couple of months, and then we'll come back." And the amazing thing is she came back and her father sacrificed her. Now we look at that and we think, oh my goodness. But it stands as an example of what can come when we say things, you know, without thinking through and say things without really the intention of following through with those things. One of the most amazing things to me is this Jephthah guy, he's included in the Hall of Faith in the book of Hebrews, right along with Abraham and Moses and David and all of those people that we would recognize, and also Rahab, recognize as people of great faith. In a pinch, virtually everyone will make oaths and vows to God. Even those that may consider themselves to be devout atheists. You've heard the saying, there are no unbelievers in foxholes. How many times do you think people say things like this to God? If you will save my loved one, I will never miss church again in my lifetime. Deliver me from financial ruin, and I promise you, Lord, that I'll be faithful in my giving for the rest of my life. Get me out of jail, and I will promise you, Lord, that I will walk the straight and the narrow. Get me this job, and I will love you forever. Even some people saying something along these lines, I don't really know, even if you're actually there, but if you are, can you take care of this thing? How many deals have parents made with God when they're riding in an ambulance with their child and their life is eking away? How many people are faithful in doing the things they tell God they will do? One of the guys I used to work with was a lot of were nuclear sub guys that were working in the nuclear industry now. And one of the guys I worked closely with was on a fast attack submarine. And they were doing, you know, maneuvers one day, you know, with some other ships and all of that. I don't know if it's international or not. But they picked up a torpedo in the water on their radar. And they spent time, you know, trying to outrun it and get out of its path and all that other kind of stuff. But what he told me was this, is he said every person on that boat was on their hands, that was on their knees praying to God that he would save them. What happened is very soon after that, they realized it was all fake, that it wasn't a reality. He said the shame of all of it, that was within 5 or 10 minutes, everyone was back to doing things the way they had before. That is a good picture of the human heart. We want to call out to God. We want to cry out to God in our time of need. But when we don't have those particular times of need, very often we don't really want to have much to do with Him at all. You look at marriage, just for an example. We did I did a wedding yesterday, and marriage vows, right? This is a measure of how faithful in the United States happen to be in keeping that vow, and that is that one in every two marriages ends in divorce. The sad thing about it, my friends, is this, statistically, it's a little bit more frequent amongst church people than it is even atheists. I mean, so what does that tell you about where the heart of church people is today? Martin Luther, you've heard of Martin Luther? Lived back in the 1500s and is one of the main guys in that Protestant Reformation we talk about sometimes. Remember that the time that a lot of people attribute to his conversion, he was caught in a fierce lightning storm and he cried out to Saint Anne, Saint Anne, save me, and if you will, I will become a monk. Now, you may not even know who Saint Anne is. I didn't. St. Anne is the mother of the Virgin Mary. Her name was Hannah. In the Hebrew, Hannah into English is Anne. But we know that sometimes people are actually faithful in keeping their vows. We know that even though 50% of marriages end in divorce, 50% of them don't. We also know that Martin Luther was true to his vow he made to God, and he did become a monk, and through that he became one of the primary figures of the Protestant Reformation. But one of the points Jesus is making here is it's really foolish for us to make vows when we cannot keep them a lot of times. Sometimes circumstances change, don't they? Let me give you an example. I'm hoping that my children would say this, that they understand that mom and dad never lied to them about anything. But I can remember one time we were making plans to go over to the beach to my mom and dad's place in St. Augustine for a week. And we canceled that trip, and our kids were just devastated by it. And they were, "You lied to us. We were going to go to the beach, and now we're not going to go." But it seemed to Lori and I might be a good thing to do because there was a hurricane bearing down on St. Augustine. But we need to understand that circumstances change sometimes, and we can't control circumstances. God is the creator of circumstances. They're no issue to Him. But when it comes to us, circumstances very often can change very greatly. The Apostle James, who was the brother of Jesus, said this. He said, "Come now, you who say today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit, yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord will, we will live and also do this or that." It's foolish for weak and feeble people, fallible people, to not give due consideration when they make vows and oaths. We all know this, that because we are broken, every one of us, we're all feeble, we're all weak, whether we want to admit it to anybody else or not. That if not for God working in us, every one of us would never in our whole lifetime would any of us be faithful in any vow that or oath that we ever made. For a lot of reasons, and one of the big ones is that when things do come true, when things actually follow as we had hoped they would, it's because of God's work, not because of what we've done. We are very much depending upon what Jack Anderson has so frequently called in the past, God's enabling grace. You see, we're not only saved by grace, but it's grace that keeps us saved. But let your statement be yes, yes, or no, no, and anything beyond this is evil. You know that if you have small children or you've had small children, that you can't tell them to do one thing and do something opposite yourself because they will be the first one to point it out. "Daddy, you told me not to do that, and look, you just did it." Well, we know this. We know that kids can smell hypocrites 10 miles away, even though sometimes maybe we as adults don't. We also know this, that an uncontrollable child will eventually become an uncontrollable adult. Jesus really is making the point here, guys, that when you say yes, mean it, and when you say no, mean it. Don't be a hypocrite. Don't say one thing and do the other. Now, there used to be a time, really, when there was a great sense, I think in American culture in general, that your word was your bond. That what you said was binding. And people could trust in what you said. One of the saddest things about our culture today is this, is lying has become the accepted thing. People basically assume that people are going to lie to them. People are not so sensitive to this whole thing because they have the idea, so-and-so lied, well, no big deal, I can lie too, everybody does it. And you need to understand that a lot of the people out there in the world today, they believe that everybody lies about stuff. It's just common practice. Unfortunately, they're right in a lot of ways. Remember the days when you could write a check anywhere without showing your driver's license or anything like that, that your check was your bond. When you wrote your signature on that check, it was good, and people recognized it as good. Now, we know this today, that if you want to write a check, you basically have to offer your eldest child as a sacrifice, right? It's ridiculous, the things you have to go through. And the sad thing is this, is it's no longer the assumption that you're going to be honest with me until you do something that proves you're not going to be. The assumption from the very beginning in a lot of things today is you're going to be dishonest. There are a couple of places that I write checks at periodically. One of them is Nichols Lumber. I do it several times a month, and let me tell you something, they have never one time ever asked me for my driver's license. I don't know about you, but to me that is refreshing because they're assuming that I'm going to be honest with them until I give them a reason to believe I'm not. My classes at the college, I take attendance. Attendance is required, and it didn't used to be that way. When I was in school, it wasn't required, but today it is, and the reason is this, is because if it's not, a good many of people in your class will never, ever come. They'll show up on test days and things like that. Otherwise, you won't even see them. So I require them to be there, but I'll give them excused absences if they have a good reason. And so sometimes they won't be in class, and they'll email me, or they'll come up to me the next class, or sometimes they let me know in advance they're not going to be there. But they'll come up and they'll say, I was sick for a few days, and I can get a doctor's note. I've got a doctor's note here that I can give to you. I was at the hospital. And you know what I tell them? I tell them it's not necessary. If you tell me you're sick, I'm going to take you at your word. If you tell me that you had to go out of town, I'm going to take you at your word. If you tell me you got called into work and you just have to be there, I'm going to take you at your word until such time as you give me a reason not to do that. And they're like, our yes needs to be yes and our no needs to be no. We went down to see Michael and Cindy a few weeks ago, and they always send us a list of things they want us to bring. A lot of it with Michael this time had to do with the construction, finishing construction of the 40-bed dorm that they're getting ready to open. And they needed some switchblade plate covers that they hadn't been able to get in Honduras. And so he gave me the number and all that. I went to Lowe's and picked them up, and they needed 10 of them, and, you know, there's a bin of them individually, but they had boxes of 10, so I just picked up one of the boxes, exactly the number he needed, and all that. I walked to the counter, and the lady does the barcode on it, and it comes back like $1.50, and she's going, that's a lot, it weighs a lot to only cost $1.50. But what I told her was this, I could have walked out with that box of switch plates for the price of one. I told her that that's the individual price. There's 10 of them in the box. Oh! But she was like flabbergasted that anyone would do something like that. You could have walked out of here with that and paid it $1.50 for it. Our yes needs to be yes and our no needs to be no. We need to be honest in all of our dealings with everybody. And if we're not, we're letting the world determine everything. Don't let the world do your thinking for you. Don't let the world define for you what is right and what is wrong. Don't let your sinful nature inside of you do that, which is what we all tend to do. I'm going to tell you something. Your opinion doesn't mean spit. It doesn't matter one iota. It's not a matter of your own interpretation. God is the God maker, is the lawmaker. He's the rule maker. And we need to live life in the manner that He would have us live. And when we don't, it just encourages the world to be more worldly. Reality, my friends, is this, is in the culture that we're in today, that Christians should stand out like sore thumbs. Anyone's around you for more than 5 minutes should know that there's something different about you. That you're not allowing the world to set the guidelines and limitations for you. That you've got some higher thing going on here. First John chapter 3 verse 10 says this, by this the children of God and the children of the devil are obvious. Anyone who does not practice righteousness is not of God. Do you have an accountability person? In other words, there's someone that you're close to that if you get out of line, they will say, they love you. They care enough about you to do that. It's not an easy thing always to do. And it's nothing that we ever do unless we have actually looked at ourselves first. This is why Jesus says, don't judge lest ye be judged. But that's the point here is not that you don't make judgments. The point he's emphasizing, if you read the rest of what's there in the context, is that don't go accusing someone else of something that you're equally or even more guilty of yourself. It says, get the log out of your own eye, then go and help your brother get the speck out of his eye. But we all need those people that we're accountable to. And let me tell you, if you're married, husband and wife, you should be the primary accountable partners with each other. When I get out of line, Lori is probably one of the first people that says to me, well, you probably ought to think about that. But she gets the same thing from me. It needs to be that way, guys. We all need that. All of us are sinners. All of us are going to do things that are outside the box. We need people around us that care enough about us to say, you're wrong. You messed up. You need to seek forgiveness. Just remember this. Jeremiah says the heart is more deceitful than all else. Don't let your heart define for you what is right and wrong, because it will lead you astray every time. One of the things that Jesus was addressing here, it seems as though, because you need to understand that Jesus just didn't show up at the mount that morning and just saying stuff off the top of his head. He's talking to people who need to hear exactly the things he's talking about. So we can say some things about his audience, and one of them is this, and that is that these people had gotten into the habit of making oaths and vows over everything and anything and not keeping a lot of them. Otherwise, he wouldn't have even brought this subject up. But they were swearing by heaven and swearing by earth and things like that. And Jesus' point, if you're doing that, you're swearing by God because all of that stuff is God's. That's all God's stuff. Because they've had this idea that it was only if you swore something in the name of God that you were really bound to keep it. Everything else was at a lesser level. You were not required to keep all of those other oaths and vows. Well, again, I just want you to understand something. There is a place for oaths. There is a place for vows. And Jesus is not saying don't ever, ever make a vow. Don't ever, ever make an oath. What he is saying is this, is you're better off not to do that than to do it and break it. Well, one thing that's very helpful is this, is if you always remember that we're good at hiding things from other people, all of us. But there's one who sees, hears, knows every single thing. Every word we ever utter, every act we ever do, every promise we ever break, every thought that passes through our head. That's kind of intimidating, isn't it? It should be, in a sense. But let me tell you something. It should be a great source of encouragement for us, too. Because reality, my friends, God knows you better than you know yourself. He's seen the ugliness of you. He's seen the filth. He's seen the dirt. He's seen all that stuff that we hide away from everybody else. He's seen all of it, and he knows it. He understands it better than even we do. And the amazing thing about all of it is even though he knows us as he does, he still loves us like he loves us. He's an amazing God. He really is. When you know Jesus Christ, you've been forgiven for countless wrongs you've done. And a lot of those wrongs were wrongs you've done to other people. And you know what the Bible teaches us? That when you wrong other people, you wrong God. Because they're made in His image. We need Jesus. All of us, with every breath we take, as much of Him as we can have of Him. And only through our relationship with Him will we ever make a good difference in this world. Lean on Him. He's not going to step out of the way and let you fall. Trust in Him. He will always do everything He has ever promised you. Love Him because He's demonstrated His love for you in sending His Son into this world to live and die that you would be reconciled to the God who made you. See, my friends, the gospel itself is the most phenomenal thing that you can possibly imagine. What other level of forgiveness would be compared to God forgiving us? There really is nothing. And yet He does it. And the neat thing about it is He invites us to join Him. And He enables us to do that. To advance His kingdom in this world. Blessings to all of you this morning. My hope and prayer is that you'll think about your oaths and vows. Be cautious. But don't do anything according to your own will, your own strength. It comes from Him. And freely acknowledge it. I hope that everyone in this room can say this. If there's any good thing that's in me or anything good comes out of me, it's because of God. Because God's presence. Because let me tell you, if that's where you're at, that's exactly where you need to be. And if you're not there, you need to think about things. Praise God, for He is good. His love endures forever.